Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of reimaginedonline.org, covering the stories in the new world of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill talks to Denisha Merriweather, Director of Public Relations at the American Federation for Children and founder of Black Minds Matter, and Ron Matus, Director of Policy and Public Affairs at Step Up. The three discuss Ron and Denisha's new paper, Controlling the Narrative, Parental Choice, Black Empowerment, and Lessons from Florida. With one out of every six Black students in Florida utilizing some type of education choice, the paper tells the remarkable story of how the Black community has embraced education choice in all its forms over the last two decades, and the opportunities for even more choice empowerment for Black families and educators alike. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the episode.
So I'm excited today to have Denisha Merriweather and Ron Matus with us to talk about a fantastic paper that they recently published with two colleagues. The paper is called Controlling the Narrative, Parental Choice, Black Empowerment, and Lessons from Florida. Denisha and Ron, welcome.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks for having us.
And so your other authors were Dava Hankerson, who is the Director of Enterprise Data and Research at Step Up for Students, and Nathan Kanin, who is the Communications Associate at the American Federation for Children, where he works with Denisha. And Denisha, let me make sure I get your title right. You're the Director of Public Relations and Content Marketing at AFC. And Ron, you are the Director of Policy and Public Affairs at Step Up for Students. So let's dive in on the paper. It's a phenomenal paper. Why don't you, Ron, give us an overview of the paper and why you guys decided to write it?
Sure. Well, thank you for putting a little spotlight on the paper. It was a lot of fun to do. I think more than anything else, we wanted to tell a story. You know, that's what we do a lot of at Step Up with all our various platforms. And this was another opportunity to tell a story with a little bit of a different vehicle, with a little bit of a report or a white paper, whatever you want to call it. And basically, it's a story that's been unfolding in front of us for many years now, which I don't think people inside Florida or outside Florida realize the extent of, which is, you know, the degree to which Black families in Florida have embraced school choice, education choice, and all its different forms. I mean, it is a little odd to me that it's not more known, the degree to which Black families have embraced choice, but we live in a weird media environment, and sometimes things that happen right in front of you get ignored. But this was an opportunity for us to put a spotlight on this trend that's been going on strong for 20 or 25 years. And that's basically what we did.
So can you share some statistics about the trends? What kind of data are you seeing that would indicate the kind of involvement that Black families have with various education choice programs?
One of the things that helped us was we had a wow number. You know, it's always good when you do these kinds of reports, which are heavy on numbers, to have a number that grabs people's attention. And I think the most important number in the paper is 100,000. We now have more than 100,000 Black students in Florida who are enrolled in some kind of state-supported non-district choice program, essentially charter schools or private schools via choice scholarships. And that is now one in every six Black student in Florida is now enrolled in one of these kinds of non-district choice programs. That is huge. And so that was one of the main things that we had going to highlight in the report. But no, it is loaded down with numbers. But what you'll see is that Black families are embracing choice in huge ways. The demand continues to grow. The outcomes for Black students in choice schools is very encouraging. The outcomes for Black students who remain in district schools is very encouraging. And then we kind of shoehorned in at the end the fact that there are growing opportunities for Black educators to create their own models. And so we highlighted some of that a little bit with some little mini spotlights in the report. But yeah, that's basically it.
So, Denisha, I know you've been sort of out front nationally talking about how important education choice is in the Black community. You have an initiative actually called Black Minds Matter, Why don't you share real quickly about that initiative and how this report sort of complements the work that you're doing through Black Minds Matter?
Yeah, of course. Black Minds Matter kickstarted the summer of 2020 when the whole nation was looking, you know, at a civil unrest and pretty much peeling back all of the layers of different organizations were like looking closely within themselves to see if there were any remnants of inequality. We work in this space of education for reform. So we know that one of the highest form, deepest forms of inequality is also in the education system. And so that's how Black Minds Matter got started, to bring awareness to just the institutional injustices that we see every day within the education system as it relates to Black students specifically. And it's just had a great start. And so ever since I coined an op-ed, it's taken off into a movement. And it's been really exciting to watch the growth of it. And so when Ron asked for us to be a partner with this paper, it was like, yes, you know, automatic yes, because it is, like you said, such a great complement to the work that Black Minds Matter is doing, because one, we know that the feasible alternative to all of the things that's wrong with the education system is school choice. Like, we know that. I know that from my personal experience, and we know that from studies that have been done on school choice programs. But to have such a strong paper to say that not only do we know it, but there's a demand from parents to pick the school choice, these school choice programs in Florida, it's just a great complement to the work. And just tips more, I don't know, I'm bad at analogies, but put more water in the bucket to prove our point that school choice works. And not only does it work, but parents want it. And now this new interesting piece, educators want it too.
So I know one of the reasons that you guys wrote the paper is you wanted to highlight, as Ron said, the extraordinary response that the Black community in Florida has had to education choice. Parents, but also educators. And you wanted to use that to help other states have the courage to move forward. And I know, Denisha, that's sort of what Black Minds Matters is also about, is trying to promote this movement around the country. Talk about how you might be able to use the paper to help other states become more open to expanding education choice. I'm just curious about what you're seeing in other states. You know, people always sort of roll their eyes about Florida, like, okay, it's Florida. That's this sort of often space. But I'm curious about what you're seeing around the country in other states, what kind of interest there is, how a paper like this might be helpful to the work you're doing in other states.
Yeah, it is funny when you're the best, people like just expect you to be the best. And they do. They like roll their eyes, like you're watching the Olympics. You're like, we already know who's going to win. So it is kind of funny, but we are the best and people should learn from us. And I give an example all the time when I'm talking about is that Nebraska. I went to Nebraska and state legislators there. There's no form of school choice in policy. There's no charter school law. There's no private school choice law. And they're closed-minded, in a sense, if I could say that, at how school choice will be implemented in the state. They have a robust number of Catholic schools, and the Children's Scholarship Fund is the number one scholarship provider that gives private funds to students, but the funds are so limited. There are so many kids who like different alternatives. And the state legislators there, they talk about how they're only Catholic schools, and there won't be, you know, that's not what they want. They want different schools. And so having a case study like Florida really shows you that once school choice programs are implemented, you have more diversity of options. And not only is Catholic education is great, and Catholic education has also been very beneficial to educating Black students, which is a history that most people don't really talk about. But also when school choice programs are implemented, parents flock to them, which the paper points out, but then also educators are able to become, and I like to call them education entrepreneurs, and found new innovative models. And so you don't just have one specific type or sect of school, you have more diversity of options. And I know Ron, he'll talk about I'll kick it over to you about the different states who have a lot of Black students.
Yeah, you know, Florida, I don't think people realize this, but Florida is among the top states when it comes to numbers of Black students. I think we're number two or three with more than 600,000 Black students in K-12. Texas and Georgia are also, you know, above 600,000. So those three are really close. But there are a number of other states that have significant numbers of Black students, but don't have the kinds of programs that we have in Florida. You know, another thing that I think is valuable in looking at Florida is not only do we have a lot of choice programs and, you know, parents clearly like them and the outcomes are clearly good, but I think Florida also shows that a lot can change in a short amount of time. You know, it's been in the span of a generation. Now, maybe for some people, you know, 20, 25 years, you know, sounds like an eternity, but, you know, historically, this has happened in the blink of an eye. I mean, the first charter school in Florida was in 1996. You know, the first Moms for Liberty in Florida were Black moms. In fact, they were in Liberty City. You know, that's where the first charter school got started in 1996. And so you go from no students in these state-funded choice programs in 1996 to 25 years later, 112,000. I mean, a lot changed in a short amount of time. And once that, you know, policy atmosphere got created, once these options, the door got open for them, everybody took the ball and ran with it. You know, it became this organic thing. Parents flocked to those options that they liked. And now, like Denisha pointed out, increasingly educators see the power that they have with this new environment, and they're creating models that are even stronger and better and more innovative. So that's another thing I'd like to emphasize about Florida. It's not only that we have a lot, but a lot of good things can happen in a short amount of time.
Denisha, talk some more about the entrepreneurship piece of this. When people talk a lot about social and economic justice, a lot of it is how do you get small business development to occur in some of these urban communities? And as you both mentioned, a lot of what you're seeing in Florida, at least, are Black educators finally being able to start their own schools. And it's having a huge impact in communities. Oftentimes, children, as we know, feel a greater sense of comfort and security when they're educated by people who come from their community, who look like them, who they relate to, who perhaps they go to church with, and there's a really deep connection between the family and them. But I've seen a lot of economic development. So talk about how important economic development is as it relates to education choice.
Yeah, schools are businesses. Is you know, people don't like to describe them that way, but they have expenditures, they have revenues, they're businesses. And so when you empower educators, and that's what we see at Black Minds Matter, we have the first directory of Black-owned schools, and we're just shy of 300 schools on the directory. Most of those schools are Florida schools because of the robust programs that are in Florida. And you see that, yeah, educators are now being empowered. Not only do they have the passion to make sure students get a high quality education, but now they're able to take that passion and be ultimately empowered. You know, we have this, lack or we don't have enough. You know, we hear this all the time of Black educators in the classroom, or we don't have enough Black male teachers. And then you know, that's the quote unquote ultimate level of empowerment, get more Black people in the classroom. But you think about it, it's like, actually, no, the ultimate level of empowerment is giving these great educators their own schools and allowing them to branch off and do some great work. And that's what's happening in Florida. Some of the great schools that I've had the opportunity to interview and interact with, Icon Prep Academy in Tampa, and they're opening another chapter in Jacksonville, and they're based on HBCU, the FAMU theme, and they're just so cool. They really are kind of cool. And then Ron's favorite, you know, you have Iman, what's the name of her school?
Kind Academy.
Kind Academy, which is like a small Montessori micro type school, and she's looking to create all of these micro schools across Florida. And so it's a diversity of, you know, and you have Afrocentric schools also, and it's just Christian private schools. But it's just so amazing to see that, yeah, they're really empowered, and not only can they have the passion, but they're also able to have the funds to implement their vision in a way that is going to impact students' lives. And that is how you say economic development. We know that education is the start of, you know, economic mobility, especially in low-income communities. And so to have people who are trying to solve the problem at the root, it's really beneficial.
So, you know, you mentioned micro schools, which is kind of a sort of a pandemic thing that's, you know, been accelerated by the pandemic, where people are coming together and forming their own little learning pods. There's been a stereotype historically that the Black community is not that interested in homeschooling. But I think we're seeing, and your paper pointed out some of this, I think we're seeing during the pandemic particularly, that a lot of Black families are very interested in homeschooling. I'm kind of want to look into the future. You know, we talk a lot about education savings accounts in Florida as kind of where we're going. And that gives people all kinds of additional flexibility to spend their money. I'm curious if ESAs and this whole micro school movement and homeschool movement is really going to explode in the Black community. I'm curious about what you guys think about that, because part of what it does is it doesn't require a lot of capital to build traditional buildings. And that capital requirement, you know, can really inhibit development. But if kids have, you know, $7,000-$8,000 that they can spend on a micro school, and that micro school doesn't require, you know, $5 million of investment in capital, I'm wondering if you guys think that the whole movement towards ESAs and this whole sort of decentralization and smaller schools and schools coming in local communities, if that might really accelerate the whole ed choice movement in the Black community.
I mean, I think there's no doubt that we're seeing huge interest from Black families in homeschooling over the past couple of years. I mean, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence, a lot of survey evidence, and it seems remarkable the extent to which Black families are looking at learning pods, wanting learning pods, wanting to do homeschooling. I wish we had better numbers in Florida. You know, the homeschooling numbers in Florida are not, they're not broken down by race. But we know that the first year of the pandemic, there was like a 35% increase or 40% increase in homeschooling in Florida. We went from 100,000 to 140,000 homeschool students like overnight. And based on everything else we've heard, I have no doubt that there are lots of Black families in that mix. And I think the only thing that's keeping that from exploding further is the fact that at this point, you know, education savings accounts are still kind of limited. I think if they were more available to more families, you'd have more families flocking to them and more educators seeing the innovative possibilities there and jumping on it.
With the development of something like an ESA, like more Black parents or families will homeschool, like without a shadow of a doubt, nationwide, I think the stat, Black families like saw the most increase in homeschooling than any other demographic group in America. I think it was from like 3% to 16%. Wow. Quote me on that, but it was like that big of a difference of Black families who started homeschooling during the pandemic. And we don't have a lot of funds for homeschoolers. So these are people who are homeschooling out of their pockets. So if there was a state fund like ESA that was implemented to let them alleviate some of those, you know, costs, I think that we'd see a lot more people homeschooling.
Moving forward, are there other things that the Ed Choice movement can do? I'm being selfish here, asking for some advice from you guys. Obviously, ESAs, we talked about that. Are there other things that we can do to provide greater empowerment for the Black community to help them have more success educating their children in their communities in the ways that allow them to be, you know, much more successful?
Well, one of the things I'm trying to do, and I'm selfishly, you know, making a pitch, but with Black Minds Matter is to make it more sexy. You know, I don't know a better way to say that, but to make school choice a little bit more culturally, you know, sexy to the black community. You know, one of the I can't speak for most people, but I know of a lot of people who don't agree with a lot of the political stances of, you know, certain organizations like Black Lives Matter, and they don't have an alternative. But Black Lives Matter is sexy. You know, it's a brand. It's a theme. It's something that people can rally behind. And although you might not get on board with every policy point, it's still something that you can put in the front of your yard and think that you're like making a difference. And so I think, you know, bringing that type of energy to the school choice and education reform movement is really important. And so I think that type of energy is what's needed and what a lot of people can just culturally get behind.
So Ron, I want to go back to another point that you made that I think I just want to highlight. You know, a lot of people are concerned that when you empower families and give them more control over how their kids get educated and all these diverse pluralistic options become available, it's going to hurt your traditional district school and the kids in those schools. But I know we have a lot of data that's contrary to that. So why don't you share a little bit about how education choice might be impacting school districts and deal with some of the myths that it actually hurts children in traditional neighborhood schools?
Sure. Well, thanks for asking that question and bringing up that point. I mean, it is one of the top tier myths that we're constantly battling. I think the experience in Florida shows pretty clearly that it is a completely ridiculous myth. I mean, if you look at the trend lines for the expansion of choice in Florida, at the same time you look at the trend lines for the most common academic indicators, they are both going up strongly at the same time. You know, it is complicated. There are all kinds of factors that go into why your academic trend lines might be going up or down. I mean, it can be very complicated. There's so many variables. But it's clear that the expansion of choice has not hurt the rising academic proficiency, rising academic indicators in Florida. And there is some evidence that the opposite is true. I mean, we have, you know, a number of studies that show there are competitive effects, you know, that when you expand choice, district schools up their game.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in Florida, it's just about any which way you want to slice it, the academic indicators are better. Our grad rates were like about 50%. I mean, it's so tragic. People forget what they were like 20 years ago. But in the late 1990s, the grad rates in Florida were barely above 50%. For Black students, they were 42%. You fast forward 20 years, the grad rates in Florida now are about 90%. For Black students, they're low 80s, but it's almost doubled. Same thing is true if you look at state test scores. Same thing is true if you look at NAEP scores. Same thing is true if you look at advanced placement results. I mean, every which way you want to slice it, Florida is way better than it was 20 years ago. And that happens to coincide with the, you know, one of the most robust expansions of school choice in the country. I don't think it's a coincidence.
Yeah. And Ron, you're real good about holding up Dade County as a good example, where one way the district raised its game was by dramatically expanding choice within the district. And I think we've seen that around the country too. You want to quickly just make a few comments about how not only are neighborhood schools raising the quality of their work, but school districts are also creating more choices so that more children can have the ability to customize an education within a school district. You want to quickly just make a few comments about that and use Dade as an example.
Sure. Well, absolutely. Miami-Dade is the poster child here. And there are lots of other districts in Florida that are doing similar things, but they haven't knocked it out of the park the way Miami-Dade has. I mean, Miami-Dade embraced choice as a district in a way that I wish districts all over the country would, because Miami-Dade shows that you can do that. You can reinvent yourself. You can use the significant resources that you have as a district to do better. And so right now, in the state as a whole, it's nearly 50% of the students are enrolled in some kind of, some kind of choice option, you know, something other than their zone neighborhood schools. In Miami-Dade, it's about 75%. So not only is there, 400 schools that are participating in private school choice programs, not only are there 130 or 140 charter schools, there are 115 something magnet schools and all kinds of other creative things down there that Miami-Dade has created over the past 15 years. Guess what? Families love it. They're flocking to those options. And Miami-Dade also has those academic trend lines to show that when you expand choice, you don't hurt your neighborhood schools. You don't hurt your district schools. In fact, the opposite is what's happening.
Yeah, it's an exciting story. Well, you guys have been really generous with your time. I want to make sure that we don't leave anything out. Your paper is extraordinary, and it's available on the Reimagined website. And so if folks hadn't had a chance to take a look at it, go over there and take a look. Are there any other points you guys would like to make about the paper, about the whole Ed Choice movement as relates to the Black community? I want to make sure that we don't leave anything out. Is there any other points that you think are important that we should make?
Can I throw out one?
Please.
One boring, wonky thing. you asked a second ago, what would you do to, what could be done to, further expand choice and make it even more viable and exciting. And I have the exact opposite of the making it more sexy answer that Tanisha had, which is a really boring, wonky thing. But one thing that I think is really neat, and I think we're going to see, more attention on this in the future, is the idea of part-time enrollment.
Yeah.
Where, only a handful of states have that. And I do think that there are huge possibilities there. If families can take part of what they want from a school district, maybe they don't want the whole thing, but maybe they want a piece of it. Maybe they want a science class that they can't get someplace else. Maybe they want some kind of elective that they can't get someplace else. Why not allow them to access what the district offers in a part-time way? And I think if you marry part-time enrollment with ESAs, it's another step toward the great unbundling. I think there's all these great things that districts have that might be attractive to families piece by piece, but not as a whole. And so I'd really, love to see that happen. I think Black families would appreciate that. I think all families would appreciate that. And I think it would really put customization, on steroids.